I'm here with Justin Forsyth, who's the chief executive, the relatively new chief executive of Save the Children, which has for 90 years been an amazing organisation, literally saving the lives of millions of children around the world, and now doing some work here in the UK. Justin, just give us a sense of the global challenge that we face in terms of the threats to kids' lives around the world.
Well, even though we've made this unbelievable step forward in the last few years in saving children's lives, kids that die of diarrhoea and pneumonia, or an upset tummy or a chesty cough, we've still got a big challenge ahead. About 8 million kids die every year from these illnesses like diarrhoea, pneumonia, malaria. And we can stop this just with a vaccination, a health worker on the front line, bit of health care provided in these rural areas. I've just been in Liberia, and actually make an enormous difference. So what we're trying to do is to accelerate the progress in saving kids' lives, but also, once we've saved their life, make sure they get a decent education. And even in the toughest places in the world, whether it's Pakistan or the Democratic Republic of Congo, we can keep kids in school.
I mean, one thing that's tricky is that a lot of the public attention is on the, or the political attention, is on the commitment of governments to spend 0.7% of national income on properly defined overseas aid. And that was obviously a historic commitment to the Labour government. It's being continued by the current government. But I was surprised to learn that the remittances that are sent by migrants from around the world back to their home countries are greater than global aid flows. And then also to think that the third leg of this stool is obviously the efforts of charities like yours, some of which comes, the money comes from government, but other is obviously raised from the public. How do you think we're at a point where we have to move on from simply talking about national aid targets for governments and think about a rather more rounded strategy for development and a more rounded campaign?
I think we need everything together. I mean, aid is still really important. Government aid is really important. In a very poor place like Liberia, which I've just been in, they only have 100 doctors for the whole country, and they're all paid for by the UK government, the US or the European Union. That's really important. But Save the Children there runs 21 health clinics, and we get money from companies, and we get a lot from the great British public who really care about these issues. So we need a mix of the private sector, Save the Children and other NGOs, and the government. And I think that those kind of partnerships actually make the difference. I mean, you have a company, for example, like GlaxoSmithKline, a great British company that's reducing the prices of vaccines, but also it's doing a partnership with us to pay for health workers in West Africa. By itself, it won't be enough. We still need the big government aid, and that's why I think it's really good that the UK government is sticking by that pledge.
Mm. Do you think that the global financial crisis has had the sort of impact, the negative impact on the development agenda, both in the West and in the developing world that was expected, or has it not played out in the way that campaigners thought?
I think the poorest in the world have suffered, and I think a lot of people of the poorest people in the world were pushed back into poverty just when they were beginning to lift themselves out. And I think we need to keep them front and centre, because I think there is a big connection between some of the potential future instability in the world, particularly with high food prices, and political instability and violence and conflict. And so we can't ignore the world's poorest. It's in our interest to address these problems. But also, future growth in the world will come from Africa. I mean, it's amazing. I've just been in Ethiopia. They have 13% economic growth. That's future British jobs and growth opportunities too. So we all
doing what? What would we? Why is that British growth?
Because of energy, telephones. I mean, the mobile phones are revolutionising Africa. You mentioned remittances. Increasingly, people actually send their remittances on their mobile phone. You can do it directly, not just through the Western Union, which take a kind of take on it. You can do it directly on a mobile phone. That's Vodafone that have pioneered all of that new technology. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people in Kenya are now employed through the mobile phone industry. And so I think if Britain's kind of great industries, whether it's pharmaceuticals or the mobile phone industry or energy, can be harnessed for development, I think that also will lead to British jobs and growth. So I think actually development is an opportunity for us in Britain, as well as doing good in the poorest countries.
And what about in Britain? It seems almost, leaves a bad taste almost, or seems in bad taste, even to think about British poverty in the same breath as life or death matters in the rest of the world. But the truth is that poverty is relative and not just absolute. And you've got programmes in the UK that try to use some of your experience and develop some of your ideas in a local context as well as in a national one. So people who listen to this, there's probably a Save the Children effort, certainly in their region and probably in their town or city.
There is, and UK child poverty is very bad at the moment. I mean, 1.6 million children are living in severe child poverty, not just child poverty. You know, there was some progress, but I mean, the poorest families, the ones that we work with, are struggling to put a hot meal on the table, pay for a school uniform, and they've been hit by VAT, they've been hit by particularly high energy prices. If you're only on 12,000 a year as a family, and 1,000 of it is going to your energy bills, and you could be paying more than richer people because actually the tariffs are actually highest for the poorest, and on top of that, you could be paying more in rent. You're actually really struggling at the moment, whether you're in work or not. And I think we've got to look at ways of protecting the poorest children through this very tough period.
Mm-hmm. And the effort that you're making is reaching how many kids in Britain, would you say, at the moment?
Oh, hundreds of thousands. And we have one programme that's really targeted about educational opportunity at 3 to 5 year olds, which is trying to bring parents and teachers and kids together to about and trying to break the cycle of under aspiration. And this is a really exciting program that alone reaches 50,000 children.
Final point, what do you think the founders of Save the Children would be thinking now? Say a word about the origins and what they would be thinking about what you're doing now.
Well, a woman called Eglantine Jebb founded Save the Children over 90 years ago, and she focused a lot actually on UK child poverty, and from her, but she also travelled to India and met Mahatma Gandhi and wrote the first Rights of the Child document. She also campaigned against children suffering during the First World War in Austria, and she was a pioneer of many things to do with children. I think what she would be saying today is to keep children central to anything we're doing in public policy and in government, and also a cause that the public and companies care about. And I think it's those partnerships of government, the public and the private sector coming together that will address these problems in the future.
So child-centeredness, far from being a product of 1960s liberalism, is actually a much older and longer-standing tradition that we should observe and honour through observance rather than through breach. Justin Forsyth, thank you very much indeed.